Hey, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in to the Vigilance Press Podcast. This is your regular host, Mike Lafferty. And on this episode, I am talking with Chris Davis of RPG Objects. Hey, Chris.
How you doing?
All right. Thanks for joining us. And we've got the man, the legend, the president, as it were, of Vigilance Press, Chuck Rice. How you doing, Chuck?
Good.
Good. Was that too much of an introduction? Did I embarrass you? I'm sorry.
No. It just feeds my ego and makes my megalomania stronger.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. So, hey, Chris, moving right along. You just got back from Gen Con. How was that?
It was pretty good. It was, I think it was like my, I want to say like my 18th year straight going, or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, I started going to it back when I was in Milwaukee. But it was pretty good. You know, it's, it wasn't anything that really stood out to me this year compared to other years. It's always a blast to go there, but I meet a lot of my friends there that have moved away, so it's kind of like a half vacation, half work time.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually run four events, and I run like two Darwin's World, and then I usually run two of something else. Sometimes I run stuff that Chuck has written. And this year, Chuck wrote the Darwin's World adventure I ran there. And then I usually do two of something else. And then I did Abandon All Hope, which is a game we're going to talk about in the future, but that, just playtesting that, some of the Gen Con. And those all went pretty well. And then everything else was pretty interesting. The Exhibition Hall, there wasn't as many RPGs as I really, you know, would recall from past years in some ways. And Wizards of the Coast booth was pretty, it was pretty pathetic for Wizards of the Coast. I mean, it was almost like a token presence, but they haven't really been there in force for a long time, for at least 3 or 4 years. You know, the booth for the Pathfinder or Piazzo is much bigger than the Wizards of the Coast booth, or at least much more involved, usually. And other than that, usually there's a lot of video games there. There wasn't that many video games there. Big emphasis on board games, which is really big right now. The only really hot role-playing thing I saw was, like, the new Pathfinder stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then also an enormous line for the Fantasy Death Watch RPG.
Really?
That was hugely popular there. I mean, they usually have a pretty awesome booth, Fantasy Flight, and they usually get some of the biggest lines. The last few years, they've had the biggest lines for their stuff. 1 year, they released, like, the Battlestar Galactica board game, and there was a huge line for that.
Oh, yeah.
They give out vouchers, so if you want to buy it there, you have to kind of have the voucher.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they almost always sell out of it. So there was a huge line for that Death Watch, and then they ended up selling out. I was thinking about picking it up, but I didn't want to wait in line.
What system is that?
It's like the Warhammer 40K. It's very similar to like the Dark Heresy and Rogue Trader stuff.
Oh, so you're playing a Space Marine for Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, so Death Watch is, you do play a Space Marine. I'm actually in my home campaign right now. I'm not actually not running a campaign for the first time in a while. I'm playing one. And the guy I play with, he's running Dark Heresy. So I'm kind of playing the same system with their what they're doing, but Rogue Trader and then Space and then Death Watch. That's like the Space Marines. In Dark Heresy, you play like the Inquisitors, and then Rogue Trader, you play like merchant people. But they're all basically the same system, but they're you know, they kind of set them up as like their own RPGs, but they're mostly just kind of the same system within a different part of the world.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You know, they're doing a Space Marines movie.
I didn't know that. I thought they already did that. I thought it was called Aliens.
No, it was called Starship Troopers.
Oh, you're right.
Okay, well, they're doing a licensed Space Marines movie, and
they're doing a licensed Space Marine video game too. The same company that did like the Space Marine strategy game, the Dawn of War stuff.
Oh, cool.
If you're familiar with that, but once again, you know what the weird thing about that is, their IP has been stolen so much that it's kind of hard to make an original Space Marine game at this point.
Yeah, that's pretty diluted.
Dark Heresy totally ripped off StarCraft, man. Totally.
Are you guys playing StarCraft 2? Because that's like the new crack for the geek set. Everyone at work is always talking about that damn game.
I haven't played it at all, really. I was not really that big of a fan of StarCraft 1. Mainly because, like, when I heard it come out, I thought it was like a space game, you know, where you did combat in space, three-dimensional. And then when I finally played it, it was still pretty much on a flat plane, playing it was just space-like creatures. So I was never really that into it. But so I haven't really been playing the second one either.
Yeah, just no,
and I've been playing. I was gonna say I've been playing Puzzle Quest, Puzzle Quest 2.
How is that?
It is better than Puzzle Quest. So, which I thought Puzzle Quest was pretty good. And this is like it has more loot, has more varied loot, and you know, that's good in RPGs.
Yeah, I played the first one. I thought it was a lot of fun, although it always put me to sleep. It was a weird game. I really enjoy playing it, but always when I was playing at night, it always put me to sleep. So it was hard.
But you can
hard
only play so much. You can only match three gems so many times before you know, you get sleepy.
Right. So I was kind of thinking about buying the second one, but I didn't know. But most people say it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's. I would say it's better than the first one, and it's you know, it's $20. So it's a you know, it's
highly
affordable. It's a budget. Yeah.
Yeah, my girlfriend was addicted to Puzzle Pirates for a while. I never quite got the hang of that game, but it's apparently hugely popular.
Is that the same thing as Puzzle Quest?
It's a similar idea. Except it's an MMO. It's an online free MMO. You pay for to get cooler stuff like you do on Facebook games. But yeah, you know, you get your little pirate and your little pirate town, and you get a little pirate house, and you can decorate, and you join up other pirates. And when you know you're gonna go raid a village or storm someone else's ship, instead of doing combat, your combat engine is basically a puzzle game similar to Puzzle Quest. And whichever team does their little puzzle more efficiently or quicker or better or whatever, they win the raid and get whatever the loot drops are for that. Yeah, I know it sounds gay, but apparently it's just really popular. So,
there's a ton of the games like that online. So I'm almost, hey, let me ask you a technical question here. Can you hear this? I'm turning on this fan. I want to know if it disturbs the podcast.
No, not at all, man. You're fine.
Okay. Is this like 1,000 degrees in Minnesota?
No, that's cool, man. That's cool. I mean, usually I do my podcast at home. People are used to hearing my dog bark and my neighbors argue and whatever. So we're a very do-it-yourself, lo-fi kind of podcast, so don't worry about it.
All right.
So tell us about Abandon All Hope. What's going on with that?
Well, you know, I've been mostly working on Tiamat, which is like this online mapping software, for like the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
But sometime last year, Dominic Covey, he's the writer who wrote Darwin's World.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of dropped this game on me. Told me he was working on this game. He was playing it at. He's like a manager at a game store.
Mm-hmm.
And so this game, he was playing with some people there. And so he presented me with the RPG. And so I've been kind of working on it over the last 6 months. In between, I'm working on Tiamat, just to play it. My plan was to get it all ready for Gen Con. So it's basically a sci-fi horror game.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people who like post-apocalyptic, I think will like it because. The premise is, not to go too long on it, but it takes place about 400 years or so in the future from now, and a new regime in not only on Earth but the few planets we've traveled to decided to kind of purge its society of all of its criminals and all of people that they view not in line with their ideology, and they put them all into this giant city-sized ship and put it off into orbit. In distant space, kind of like a big, floating Australian space. And that goes on for a couple hundred years, about 20 years. There people are on the ship, so there's generations of people that have grown up just within these prison ship. And it reaches kind of the edge of the galaxy, and then something happens to the ship. The ship takes a lot of damage, and creatures are on the ship. And I would give away what happens is kind of part of the role-playing game to kind of figure out what's going on and kind of in a Cthulhu Mythos way. And the players are, prisoners on the ship who sustained enormous amounts of damage during this phenomenon that's happened, and they play in the setting of the ship. So it's kind of like a post-apocalyptic setting in that they're playing almost in like the aftermath of what the place should be. So there's a lot of scavenging and working with what's left behind. But then it's got a big horror element similar to like the video game Dead Space would be a good analogy for the way it look and feel of the mm-hmm. game, and or Call of Cthulhu, because there's like an element of the kind of the demonic in here. So that's kind of the set of the game, and it's a very specific setting, and the rule system is not D20. It's totally designed for the game itself, and it's pretty streamlined and simple compared to most systems. And it's almost like a campaign where, I don't know if I envision people playing it a ton, because it depends if they like the setting, maybe, but it's almost like a long-term campaign where people explore the world and figure out what's going on and just try to survive.
Okay, so kind of a sci-fi survival horror.
Exactly.
Is that, would you compare it to Event Horizon at all?
Yes, that's kind of one of, it's in like the, you know, the credits of inspirations in it. That's kind of a good analogy too. Kind of like where someone goes into the, you know, they're in the reaches of space and they go to a place where some things happen to the ship, very much in the way that maybe it happened on Event Horizon, in that same kind of theme.
Okay. It looks like
it sounds like Metamorphosis Alpha to me.
In some ways, I guess. And the fact that it all takes place on a big ship, totally. Except there's no real, I mean, big mutants or anything like that on there.
There's no mutations, yeah?
There is, like, some subtle mutations. There is a couple different... the system is basically point-based, more or less. You get build points, and you can purchase traits and stuff like that for your character. I uploaded a character sheet if anyone wants to go... You know, if they go to the RPG Object website, there's, like, an Abandoned Outlook homepage, and I have the character sheet up there. And over the course of the next few weeks, I plan on just putting, like, a preview of every chapter up so people can see it. But it's basically a point build system where you start with so many points and you build by traits. So there is, like, a mutant trait that they can purchase, but it's a very subtle thing. It's not, like, something that most characters would have, and it's very minor. So it's not like Darwin's World or Metamorphosis Alpha or something like that where, like, everyone's a mutant and everyone's got powers.
I'm looking at the character sheet right now. It's pretty cool, kind of a prison record thing. And just for listeners who might not know, that's just rpgobjects.com where you can find all that. I'm seeing 6 attributes, prowess, reflexes, wits, willpower, sociability. And this is kind of reminding me of the storyteller system, kind of stripped down.
Yeah, in some ways. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like the Warhammer system stripped down in a way, the way some of these die rolls work and stuff like that. Everything is and maybe I haven't played my storyteller, but everything is based on dice that move up rank, and everything is kind of based on a d12, and it can go up and down based on different conditions. So sometimes you need to roll under something, sometimes you need to roll above. So if your die gets worse, you go from like a d12 to a d10, or if you get two dice worse, it goes from like a d12 to like a d8, or it might go up to like from a d12 to a d20. And the system basically works off that, where you have a base die roll and it's modified based on certain conditions or traits you might have. But the one kind of unique thing about the game is the 3 mental attributes, kind of like Insanity is in Cthulhu.
Oh, yeah,
you've got 3 of them. It's
Despair, Guilt, and Insanity.
Right. And so it kind of tracks over the course of the game. Like, the thing that I found fascinating about running it when I was at Gen Con is like the Guilt one, it kind of provides a rule for players doing bad things. So if you kill someone for no reason or let someone die – you have to make a guilt roll to see how it affects your character. And as you go up the guilt rank, there's certain negatives for you to, like, say, resist insanity or do different things. So it kind of has morality as a mechanic in the game. So the 3 of those things, they go gauges and they go up and down over the course of the game. And depending on where you're at on a certain gauge, you might be like more weak-willed, so you get more insanity, or you might be have more difficulty in combat, stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah, I gotta say, this character sheet looks really cool. I'm liking this.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun when I've played it. It's a great – it's really system. It's really quick to make characters. It's really, really streamlined totally for the setting. It's not something I don't know that I would use a system, say, I'll try to play it to another game per se, because it's very – combat's not really that complex per se. It's mostly just a it's keeping very basic. It's not like D20 at all, where you got all the different modifiers and stuff like that. There's very few modifiers, and there's very few ability scores, as you can see, compared to some of the other games. It's very streamlined in the setting. I've said that too many times.
It's all right, man. It's all right. I'd kind of like to talk to those guys at some point. I like to talk about the design a little bit. And it seems like maybe I'm just, I used to be a big storyteller guy, so maybe I just want to see storyteller elements in there. But especially with the ship being named Gehenna, I'm wondering if these guys were old vampire dudes.
I'll have to ask Dominic. I don't know if Dominic's played that much vampire or not.
Okay, I'm just wondering.
It could be. I'm really bad at casting because I've played a couple world, the World of Darkness stuff. That's what you're referring to, a storyteller, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I've played a couple of those things at cons, but beyond that, I've never played like a long-term campaign of any of that stuff to really know.
That's kind of my gaming back in the 90s before I got back into D20, was just strictly werewolf and vampire for a while. But just to make sure we give credit where credit is due, it looks like the writers are Dominic Covey and Miguel De Dios.
Yep.
And the cover was by Jason Walton and, again, Dominic Covey, and the cover looks really cool.
Yeah, I love the cover. That's the same guy who did the when I did a Darwin's World novel, he did the cover.
Oh, cool.
And, so I kind of splurged on the cover just because I Dominic did a lot of the interior artwork and maps and stuff like that, and most people have seen his artwork in like some Darwin's World books. So since he was already going to give some art there, I decided to kind of throw a little more money at the cover.
I mean, that's a smart writer who becomes his own artist. I need to do that. I'd save so much money. But all I can draw is stick figures. So, well, anything else you want to add about Abandon All Hope or Gen Con or Darwin's World?
Well, Darwin's World, the only thing I'd like to say is that we just put up the Darwin's World Gen Con Adventure up for sale that Charles wrote. And we have a Savage World conversion of Darwin's World that John Woodland is working on, and I'm pretty much finishing on laying out the Survivor's Handbook of that. And then he's planning on giving me the GM guide and not too much longer. So people who like Savage Worlds, that Darwin's World version, which has been in the works for a very long time. And it's kind of got a sordid history of like, we've started a couple times and the first time we took too long and Pinnacle took it away from us. And then we got permission again. And then that was probably a year and a half ago. So it's been a long time coming. So that one's that's almost done. It'll probably be released in the next 2 weeks or so.
That's cool. And just to pimp that adventure, that's Return of the Feeding Grounds, a new yep. Darwin's World adventure premiered at Gen Con, written by our very own Chuck Rice. And that's on sale at RPGObjects.com.
Mm-hmm.
So, cool. All right, wait, while we're talking about Chuck, Chuck, you've got a new release, don't you?
Yeah. I just put out Old School Magic, which is a book of alternate rules and classes and new spells for Osric, which is the old school reference index compendium.
That just trips off the tongue, doesn't it? It's almost poetry.
It is poetry.
All right. And this was kind of a benchmark for Vigilance Press, because this is the first book that we've had that actually broke the top 10 on RPG Now.
Yes. I think that is true.
Is the Osric like online somewhere, like the core rules?
It is. And you also can download it as a free PDF, which I know was on RPG Now for a time. And I know you can also get it from Your Games Now. So there is, you can also, from Knights and Knaves.
Yeah, knightsandknaves.com/OSRIC. You can download it there.
Yeah, you can download it there in PDF form. I'm sure there's an online SRD for it up there somewhere. For those who don't know what that is a recreation of the first edition of the world's most popular fantasy game ever. I think I can say that without, I don't think anyone has trademarked that yet. Using material from the SRD, from the D20 SRD.
So kind of using the SRD to recreate the old school gaming experience where maybe you were fighting dragons and maybe you're doing that in a dungeon.
Yeah, it's the first edition specifically.
Okay, cool.
Do you know who put that together the first time? Like, decided to reverse engineer this stuff and put it up?
It was a couple of the guys from the Knights and Knaves community.
Oh, okay.
And I should know their names, and I'm a jerk for not knowing.
Shame on you, Chuck. Shame on you. Well, next podcast we'll make it up and mention them. But yeah, knightsandknaves.com/Osric. Actually, they have T-shirts as well.
They have everything. You can buy print books as well at cost.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Yeah, it seems like
you can buy a print book of the old school rules or whatever.
Yeah, of Osric, yes. Yes.
Cool.
They are very careful for legal reasons never to directly profit off the core rules. Because I think when they first released it, they were kind of bracing for possibly some cease and desist letters that never came.
Hmm. They should be able to just put out, the mathematical rules without any problem. So,
that means
nothing if someone doesn't want to just, sue you.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Over the head.
Yeah,
I was thinking about suing IBM earlier this year, and I was told that I had a pretty good case based on some labor violations, but do you want to sue IBM? Because, you know, they got deep pockets. I think it's the same situation with trying to – if Wizards of the Coast wants to sue you, yeah, you know.
It's not Wizards of the Coast. It's Hasbro.
You are correct. It's even worse.
Which is even more fun, yeah.
It's an even bigger Death Star, just full of money and lawyers. So, yeah.
Because and isn't I believe George Lucas is currently the majority owner of Hasbro.
Oh, so it's a literal Death Star full of money and lawyers.
Yeah, so in fact, he's going to sue us for saying Death Star Hasbro is.
I'll send him $1 after this podcast, but yeah. Wow. Well, anyway, Osric's been very popular. There's a huge kind of grassroots movement behind it, and that's doing pretty well for you. Our old school magic's doing pretty well, it sounds like.
So let me ask you this.
Go ahead, Chris.
Just about Osric. Is it kind of a faithful rendition of, you know, the most popular RPG, or is like down to like, or is it kind of an updated version? I'm just curious whether they've kind of updated anything in it that they felt was silly back then, or is it trying to be as faithful as it can?
More the latter. There are some minor mathematical differences, just so that you know, they aren't ripping anyone off. But other than that, it is an attempt to be as faithful as possible. The origin of the project actually starts with Castles and Crusades, which was an attempt to do more of what you were talking about, of trying to capture the old school vibe, but with completely new mechanics. And a lot of the Grognards were really unhappy with that approach. But they saw, I guess, a possibility, through Castles and Crusades, both that it would be possible to recreate first edition through the SRD, but also that it would be popular. Like, I really think, Castles and Crusades kind of woke people up to just how much demand for old school stuff that there is. And my old school stuff is the best selling books that I write through Vigilance Press.
Hmm. Cool.
Like, I have experimented trying to do some more D20 stuff. Like, I did Mecha Omega, which, was compatible with D20 Modern and Modern 20, and I did Public Enemies, which was
Super 20. Villains.
Yeah, for Super 20. But my old school stuff sells better than either of those.
Yeah, I know we've talked over IM a few times, Chuck, about how maybe nostalgia is the right word, but it seems like people have a real affection for that stuff, like Icons, which we've talked about several times in the podcast, and we had Steve Genson on just last week. I mean, that's, you look at it, it's awfully close to Phase Rip, you know, the old Marvel RPG, and people are just eating that up like hotcakes.
Someone did right? Go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah. No, yeah, Phil Reed of the 4C system.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's – I mean, Icons is definitely different from 4C, but you can kind of see how maybe they're cousins, you know? There's a lot of similarities there.
Well, yeah, and I actually don't believe any of the appeal of these old games is nostalgia. I just think you know, good games are good games. I'm not one of those people who turns his nose up at D20 for obvious reasons. And I think, you know, a long time from now, I will still be playing D20 too. You know, I think Phase Rip and, you know, Old School Hero and First Edition D&D, that these are all still good games today, like they were, you know, back in the past.
Hey, speaking of games, what are you guys playing right now? Are you guys gaming right now?
Yeah, well, I told you before. I was, you know, like I said, I'm playing, you know, tabletop wise. I've been playing Dark Heresy.
Oh, so I missed that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but otherwise, besides that, I have not playing. You know, we play board games a lot. So other than that, it's pretty much board games.
Oh, that's cool. I just moved to Colorado Springs. I'm kind of between gaming groups right now, but I've been. There's a new expansion out for City of Heroes, so I've been playing that a little bit. But
Oh, you're talking about online? You're talking about digital too? What am I playing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
I just finished Darksiders, which it's like kind of a action RPG-ish thing on the Xbox 360.
Huh.
I don't know if I can recommend it. It was like a it's kind of an old school console game until the boss fights make you want to throw the controller at the TV.
That is old school.
But in between the boss fights, it was really fun. And then I've been playing a little bit of startup Dragon Age again, the expansion for Dragon Age.
Oh, cool. There's a sequel coming out for that soon, I think.
I think it's not until next year, but yeah, I know there is a sequel. I think that game, the original game actually, I heard them say, was more successful for them overall than their Mass Effect game.
Really?
Dragon Age was.
That's impressive. Chuck, you were playing Mass Effect, weren't you?
Oh, I'm a huge Mass Effect fan. I like Mass Effect quite a bit more than Dragon Age, but it doesn't surprise me that Dragon Age would be more popular. Fantasy games are popular, and you know, these are the Baldur's Gate guys, so they have kind of a pedigree. But yeah, I think Mass Effect 2 might be the best game I've played since Civilization 4, so that's like the best game of in 5 years or so. For tabletop gaming, I've been shockingly playing Osric, but on the computer, actually, my Mass Effect 2 gaming has toned down. I've been playing this cutting edge new game. It's called Diablo 2. You may have heard of it.
It sounds familiar.
It's the latest thing.
Wow, I spent easily a year of my life in that game. So there's a lot of replay value. I can't argue it. But
I totally back up what he says about Mass Effect. Though I enjoyed Mass Effect, both of Mass Effects probably better than I enjoyed Dragon Age. I mean, I had a lot of fun with Dragon Age, but I actually find the combat in Dragon Age kind of boring after a while.
Well, and that too much micromanagement. Like you pretty much, like, it almost should have been turn-based because you have to pause every few seconds to update what your party is doing anyway. So it, I found the combat in Mass Effect, especially Mass Effect 2, which had much more satisfying shooting. I found the combat much more satisfying in Mass Effect 2, and frankly, sci-fi greater than sign fantasy. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, Dragon Age 2, it's going to be like Mass Effect, where you have a character who has has voice dialogue, and you have a name.
Your
like
choices
Shepherd.
Are going to carry over.
No, like it's totally new.
No,
the Dragon Age 2 is going to be like Mass Effect in that it's going to be much more, the combat's going to be much more like Mass Effect, I think, and the way your character is. You can't just make any character. You'll create a character like in Mass Effect, but you'll have, you know, an original first name, but your last name will be, it already said what it is. I can't remember what the last name is. It's like, they've already given the name, and so that way you'll be doing dialogue like you do in Mass Effect, where it's like video, where you're talking to the person, you kind of choose what you kind of want to say, and then it will go on and do the video. In more expanded ways, just like Mass Effect. So they're going to use more of the engine or more of the way Mass Effect 2 works with Dragon Age 2.
Wow,
that's
frankly the two games I'm most looking forward from Bethesda would be Mass Effect 3 and their Old Republic. That might be. Any MMO is ever going to suck me in and steal my soul, it would be the Old Republic.
In the BioWare, though, right? You said Bethesda.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Yes, BioWare. Sorry, Bethesda.
We strive for accuracy here, Chuck.
You know, I was excited for the Old Republic,
Bethesda.
Too. But I saw, like, a gameplay trailer of it, and I kind of was disappointed. Just because it seemed like a very traditional, here's the tank, here's the attacker. Here's the healer. I really thought they would do something different with that, beyond what's very similar in World of Warcraft. So I was really excited for that game, but I was kind of disappointed how it pretty much falls into the traditional MMO style.
But it looks like they're doing those BioWare things of you know, your choices mattering, the moral choice, and like every character you meet supposedly is going to have voice acting for its dialogue.
True, true.
So I think Knights of the Old Republic definitely one of the five best games of all time, so.
And nothing else, the trailer for that new Old Republic MMO was really amazing. That last cinematic trailer, the 5-minute one set on Alderaan, that was incredible.
Yeah, that was better than any of the movies.
It was better than the last three movies, that's for sure. Maybe the last four.
they have a hugely good feel for the Star Wars universe, in my opinion.
I mean, we can just say no Gungans, no Ewoks, and that puts the level above several movies right there. But yeah, that was amazing. Although they've been some really great. I mean, the last DC Universe Online trailer was really amazing.
But, yeah, I was gonna say that too.
I mean, that the gameplay can't look anything like that, because I'm sure that cost several million dollars to compile and create. But yeah, that was better than a lot of the comic books I've been reading this last year. Definitely kind of grim. Hey, speaking of sequels, you guys know Torchlight 2 is coming out spring of 2011.
I never played the first one.
Wow,
that
seems soon.
Yeah, it does seem soon. It's basically Diablo 2 with more of a cartoony style. I think Chuck introduced me to it, actually. I had a lot of fun with it, but the sequel is going to have co-op mode. I don't know if it's going to be a full MMO, but at least have that Diablo 2 style co-op mode. So looks like it should be a lot of fun.
Well, I just read literally today online that I haven't played it on because I don't do a lot of PC gaming. I do some, but I usually game on my Xbox 360. And now they're going to put Torchlight 1, I think, on the Xbox 360.
Oh, that'd be perfect fit for
that. This like fall or like, you know, before Christmas.
Oh, you should check it out. It's a lot of fun. There are some, I guess you'd call them steampunk elements in there too. I mean, you've got some, one of your characters, you know, can summon golems, but the golems are basically, would I be lying if I said they were kind of steampunk robots, Chuck?
No, you would not. I think he's called the Alchemist.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, there's like guns and robots but this is all meaningless because as we all know, Civilization V comes out in 28 days, 2 hours, 56 minutes, and 30 seconds. So according to the countdown clock that I installed on my desktop.
Damn, Chuck, that's kind of sad.
I'm equally as excited for that.
Really? Okay, all right. Then I'm in the exception here. I haven't played Civilization since the 1980s, so.
Oh, you're
the
a
hell
loser.
Out of last one.
Sorry, man. Sorry.
Civilization IV was awesome, but Civilization V looks. Oh, my heart is it's just beating faster right now just thinking about it.
We'll have to have you back to do a review of that then in 28 days and however many hours and seconds.
I even played Civilization Revolutions. It's pretty good.
28 days, 2 hours, 55 minutes, 45 seconds. This is assuming a midnight release, and if they offer it at midnight, I will be out in front of a GameStop.
You're an addict, Chuck.
Yeah, just keep laughing. Just keep laughing.
That's cool.
I'm not ashamed. I'm out, and I'm proud.
Chuck loves him some Civilization. All right, guys. Well, hey, anything else we want to touch on before we call it a podcast?
No, not for me.
Chuck, yeah.
No, I think we covered the pressing issues like Civilization V's release date.
Nice. Oh, hey, I should probably mention another Vigilance press release we had this last week was Kaiser's Gate, which for True 20 we had it previously out for a different system, but. Kaiser's Gate is basically kind of a mashup of traditional fantasy elements and World War I with some great art by John Gibbons, several other artists, Scott Harshberger, Brent Chumley, and that's for sale on RPG Now for just a little under $10. If you're into 220 and you like World War I and you've always wanted to fight dragons in a biplane, it's the game for you. So just wanted to get
who
that.
Who hasn't, really?
Well, apparently just the guys who want to play Civilization V. So, okay, that joke fell flat. Sorry. They can all be winners. Sorry. All right. Well, hey, guys, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you later.
All right. Sounds good.
Bye.